This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbach.
This week on The Gaggle, we have on Ann Lewis. Ann Lewis is former White House Communications Director for former President Bill Clinton and former senior advisor to Hillary Rodham Clinton during the 2008 campaign. Ann, it is a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, David. Delighted to be with you.
Ann, I'd love to talk to you first about your relationship with the Clintons, where you first met them and how you know them, and what it has been like to work with them for all these years.
Well, I met Bill Clinton first around the time that he went from being the youngest elected governor in the United States to the youngest defeated governor in the United States. I was political director of the Democratic National Committee. The year was 1981. And you are too young to remember, David, but there was a Republican sweep that left a lot of people in Washington just sort of stunned. And we were literally at the DNC trying to pick up the pieces. Bill Clinton was trying to decide what he was going to do next. He came to the DNC. We talked to him. This was this really talented guy, obviously. He took a role for a while as chair of state and local elections. And then after a few months, he told us that he was going back to Arkansas. He was going back to Little Rock, to Arkansas, and asked people to give him another chance. And I will tell you, I am still impressed to this day that he would do that. He could have had a very good life staying in Washington, but this was somebody who really believed in public service, even when it was hard. And so he and Hillary, and I hadn't even met her yet, were going to go back to Arkansas while she was still there, living there. They were going to pick up his career as an elected official and their lives in Arkansas. And, you know, they haven't been much different since. They just got to work. There was something that needed to be done, and they set to and did it.
When was the first time you met Hillary then?
Well, that's interesting, because sometime between 1982 and 92, I met Hillary, and, you know, I don't have as strong a memory of the first time I met her. It was sort of part of a continuum, if you will, along the spectrum of knowing the Clintons and supporting them and watching them both politically and personally. But by 1992, Bill Clinton is a candidate, I had the chance in some small and large meetings to watch Hillary Clinton, to hear her speak, and really to be impressed by her. Then after the election in 93, my good friend Maggie Williams was chief of staff, and she put together some small groups, mostly of women, who could come in, meet with Hillary, be sort of voices from the outside, if you like, from outside the bubble, talk about what was going on. I had the great opportunity to be part of that group.
You once told me, and you probably don't remember this, during the 2004 election, what happens when you don't fight back? For example, with Swift Vote Veterans for Truth, what happened to John Kerry when other people define the narrative and you don't fight back? Can you talk a little bit about defining narratives during campaigns and what happens when you fight back versus when you don't fight back, and how narratives get defined and how important it is to fight back if there are truths versus things that aren't being told that are truths
out
there?
Absolutely. You're right. I don't remember what I told you, David. but here's what I think I know. It might be even a little more since then. First is, you are running for president, or for it to be a leader, who is going to take care of our country, right, to protect us, to represent and advocate for the people. If people see that you don't fight back for yourself, if they don't see that you're willing to get out there, not just to defend yourself, but to go further, to be an active, visible, effective advocate for yourself, they could begin to wonder just how hard you would work for them. The second piece, so we have to think of public conversation as filling a space, right? There is such a thing as a public dialogue, especially during presidential election years. And that space is going to be filled by the people who are the most active and the most vocal. So if, again, it is the negatives, it is the Swift voters who are lying, but if their lies are the only thing, let's say, that you hear, then their lies are going to dominate the conversation. And people only get their information from what they hear. And that, for me, is the last point, which I keep coming back to. Democracy is a great system. We are so fortunate, all of us, that we are born into this country, that we can take for granted the right to choose our leaders, the kind of rights that people all over the world are still fighting for, dying for, hoping for. So we have the ability to make those choices. But you know what? The choices people make will only be as good, as correct, if you will, as well thought out, as the information people have to make them with. So it's my obligation, as somebody who cares about government, to get good information out there. It's the candidate's obligation to get that information out there, because people deserve to know all their choices.
How do you determine, though, as a campaign, to respond to certain accusations versus others? For example, if Trump says something that is totally ridiculous versus something that's semi-ridiculous, who makes those types of decisions?
At the top levels of the campaign, you conclude three things. Is this something for which there should be a response? A. B. At what level should the response come? Because not everything that is said has to be said by the candidate, right? What is the most effective way to rebut it? And D, if this is a charge that has been made that is getting very little attention, would you actually be drawing more attention to it? So that's the one caution I would say. Don't elevate something if you don't have to. If there's just one nutcase out there, even with a megaphone yelling, you may not have to get involved. But if it starts to break through into the public consciousness, and again, you can do that. You know, you have lots of ways in the campaign to measure public attention, both in terms of what the media is carrying and paying attention to and what you see showing up in public opinion polls. If something starts to break through, for sure you need to swat it down.
And these ways of responding have changed throughout the years, for example, with social media now. So have you learned your lessons yourself of how to respond, for example, with social media?
Well, let's just put it this way. I am so old that I remember mimeograph machines, right? Those are the horse and buggy days of political communication. Nothing in our lives has changed more quickly than the ways in which people get information and spread information about their policy choices. Now it is within hours. When I was working at the White House, we would joke that the news cycle was about 4 hours long. You know, 4 hours between the time you got a question from, let's say, CNN, and 4 hours later, if you hadn't answered it, Wolf Blitzer would be on the air saying, right, the White House is unable to explain. Well, if it was 4 hours then, it may be 4 minutes today. We are accustomed to instantaneous response. And because that's now the public expectation, everything gets speeded up. The good news about this, you have to work much, much harder and faster. The good news is you have so many more ways, so many more tools to reach people. You can reach them wherever they are. You know so much more about what they read, what they listen to, what they watch. Now it is your job to get in there, to get into all those streams of information with your side of the story.
Working as White House Communication Director, what was your routine like? What did you do? What decisions did you make? Could you describe a little bit about that position?
We had sort of parallel operations here. I was the communications director. Mike McCurry was the press secretary. I would say the press secretary did the sort of 24-hour cycle. What did the person do the last 12 hours? What's he going to do in the next 12 hours? At communications, we tried to do a little longer term. In the next 2 weeks, in the next month, what are the issues we want to highlight? If the president had given a State of the Union address the month before, what are the issues or initiatives he rolled out in the State of the Union that we want to take on the road? So we would look at the calendar and then see what are the most effective ways, what are the events and messages we can build around the president's calendar. Then second, we worked with all the cabinet offices to make sure that they too were carrying the messages be initiatives telling the stories. Around commencement time, for example, we would be talking to the communications directors and all the cabinet offices about, you know, were their bosses going out to make commencement speeches? Could we suggest some issues, some events and ideas that we think, you know, that the administration's doing really well that we'd like to see you highlight? So we try to go a little longer term as compared to, let's say, the press office. Look for more creative events. It wasn't just a matter of one-on-one conversations with reporters. How do we put an event together? If we're talking about healthcare, where does the president go to talk about healthcare? So everybody looking at that, anybody who watches television or the evening news, even for 40 seconds, is going to see the president in a hospital, in a nursing home, in a venue, and think, oh, he's working on healthcare today. I will tell you, it seems hard to imagine now, but by the, you know, close to the end of Bill Clinton's term, second term, we had reduced the federal deficit, the yearly deficit, to zero. We had balanced the budget. And so we had this great meeting to talk about what was the best visual to demonstrate that we had a balanced budget. Did we do sort of an odometer, like in a car that clicked down to zero? You may be interested to know what we wound up with was just somebody drawing a big zero with a marker, because that was the story we had to tell. So we look at what are the stories we have to tell, what are the best ways to tell the American people what the president is doing for them, that they would be interested in, that they would care about, and then how do we get it out there, and what are the plans for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks in advance?
And working as a senior advisor for Secretary Clinton's 2008 campaign, then Senator Clinton, what was that like for you? What role did you play, and how did that work?
Well, it was a little of each. That is, I was directly responsible for overseeing outreach to women voters, which was a joy to do because we knew we were doing something historic. And while I think it took the campaign a while to figure out how to deal with this history, you know, how to, again, tell the story about Hillary in ways that connected immediately with women, but with everybody. You know, we were more than half the population. She was not running as the woman candidate. She was running as a candidate who was a woman. And what did that mean? How did we talk about it? How did we organize around it? That was one. And then second, as a member of the communications team, I did a lot of surrogate work. So being on television, talking to the press, being an extra, I don't know, what do we say, an extra pair of tonsils, an extra mouth, if you will, to get the message out.
Do you think there are particular lessons that the campaign learned this time to run a better campaign, or do you think that it was just a different candidate that we're running against in 2008?
Well, I think absolutely this campaign, and I'm very proud of the work they're doing, is built on and has learned the lessons we learned in 2008. One, they were not ambiguous or ambivalent, I guess is a better word, about the fact that she was a woman candidate, that this was historic, and that women would represent a strong base of support. They went with that from the beginning as part of her base of support, and it's built into the issues she talked about. Emphasis on field. Now, some of this, you know, the world has changed. Politics has changed. But I think as I look at this campaign, they also learned from some very important lessons from the Obama campaign of 2008 and 2012 about the value of a field organization that uses analytics, that uses data, so you absolutely know where your voters are. You know who they are, you know where they are, and you can go back out and make sure that they turn out. And I think this campaign is in the process of doing that as well as anyone I've seen.
For voters today who are saying that they won't vote for Hillary and they won't vote for Trump, what would you say to them?
I would ask them to take another look at Hillary Clinton, at her record of achievement. I would say, you know what she'll do because you know what she's done. Let me tell you what she's done. Let's talk about this young woman who went out to register Hispanic voters in Texas before anybody had ever heard of, you know, the Hispanic vote as a trend, who went undercover at the height of the resistance to civil rights to investigate a segregated academy, who got beat up for trying to win universal health care and just picked herself up, went back out and fought and won health care for children. The senator who reached across the aisle and won bipartisan support for better health care for military families and decent health care for the Ground Zero, the first responders at Ground Zero. Look at her record as Secretary of State when she won a ceasefire between Israel and Gaza, built the strongest ever coalition against Iran, and made women's rights a cornerstone of U.S. policy. So one, look at what she's achieved. Two, look at what she's talking about and says she will do. Look at her economic plan. Why is this Democratic candidate being endorsed by major Republican business leaders? You know, whether it's Meg Whitman in the high-tech field, or some of the guys, the national security people, or somebody like Jim Glassman, who was an undersecretary for diplomacy for President Bush, or Rosario Moran, who was the treasurer under George Bush. Look at the number of Republicans who have made the choice that we're asking you to make. Look at the two candidates and decide which of these two is better for my country.
The final question for you, Anne, is if I were a young adult in college and I went up to you and I said, I want to be Anne Lewis one day, what advice would you tell them?
Figure out what it is you passionately care about and who are the people, organizations, candidates that are working towards that goal. And then second, whatever else you do, get involved in a political campaign, because it's not until you get into it firsthand that you're going to see how politics really works. You're going to decide whether or not this is something you could do day in, day out. And not everybody, you know, who jumps into a campaign thinks, wow, I can't wait to spend my life doing this. So find out early, but you'll also learn what skills you have that you will have to offer for the next campaign. It is that kind of hands-on practice, while knowing where your head is, and by all means, knowing where your heart is, that's the best possible start.
Anne Lewis, former White House Communications Director for President Bill Clinton and former Senior Advisor for Hillary Clinton in the 2008 campaign. It was a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.